The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Loki. Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki Season 2 is...
marvelous.
Great.
And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki Season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
How are you now? We're back, baby. How are you now? Folks, we got two Montreal Canadiens losses to talk about on this particular episode of the Bottom 6 Minutes podcast presented by Habs Eyes on the Prize. I am Matt Drake, and this is episodes 66 and 67, all crammed into one. Why am I doing that? Well, I had intended to post my regular episode after the Devils game the other night, but I think I mentioned this in the previous episode. I was visiting one of my best friends in Quebec. We were near Magog on Lac Massawippi. In fact, we were celebrating the fact that he just got himself engaged recently. So I was a little bit drunk, and if I had recorded an episode that night, it would have been pretty incoherent, and I don't think anybody would have enjoyed it, so I waited. Now tonight, I have returned back to my home, which is roughly 8 hours away from there, and I'm able to actually sit down and record this episode properly because I was driving all day, so I was definitely not drinking. So here we go. Two different games to recap. I'm going to try to make this as concise as possible so I don't end up with a 45-minute episode for you here, and we're going to see what we can do. So the first one that we got to talk about, your Montreal Canadiens lose 3-1 to the New Jersey Devils. Now, this one was pretty expected. The Devils are a pretty strong team. And in the first 2 minutes of that game, they were hemmed in their own zone before they actually started getting going. Jonathan Drouin had a pretty nice chance relatively early in the game. But about midway through the period, Nathan Bastian gets away with a clear hold in behind the Habs net, ends up getting the turnover, wrapping around, and beating Jake Allen to make it 1-0. Habs push back a little after that. Anthony Richard had a nice breakaway chance that got stopped. They had a few chances, really, but they just couldn't score. And then with a minute left in the period, neutral zone turnover, Devils take it into the Habs zone. Damon Severson finds Nico Hischier out front on the back door. He puts it in and makes it 2-0. Now at this point, with how good the Devils are, you're feeling like it's maybe not a very good chance that the Habs end up coming back in this one. And there wasn't a whole lot going on for them in the second. Very clear, however, that the officials had decided not to call jack shit on the Devils. Brutal high stick on Caden Gooley, no call. Cross-check to the back of Raphaël Harvey-Pinard, no call. Could have been a scoring chance there, but what are you going to do? Denis Gurianov gets one back for Montreal, though. And he's been on a bit of a tear recently. I mean, this time he actually gets an opportunity. He gets set up from below the goal line by, I think it was Rem Pitlick. Was it Rem Pitlick? Doesn't matter. Anyways, he's standing up, you know, kind of off to the side of the slot, and he just absolutely rips one past Schmid and makes it a one-goal game. Unfortunately, that was the best that the Montreal Canadiens were going to do in that particular contest. It does go into the third period and goes pretty late. We're kind of looking at the opportunity of pulling the goalie for the Montreal Canadiens. And, of course, what happens? Tomáš Tatar gets the 3-1 goal. They kept Jake Allen out of the net even after that. And, yeah, they just couldn't really get anything going. The Devils looked for some additional empty net scoring there, but they couldn't get it either. And that's your final, 3-1. Let's get right into the Avalanche game as well, because honestly, I think we need to amalgamate these games from a silver lining standpoint and everything. And for the Avalanche game, I'm just going to pick this one up for when I actually got home. So I'll be honest with you guys. I listened to the first half of the game, so the first period and about half of the second period on the radio while I was driving home. I get home and... you know, I already know what the score is, but I don't quite know how bad it is because they don't really tell you on the radio what the shot clock is at, right? They mention it in passing, but like also keep in mind, I'm driving in the dark here, so I'm not like fully immersed in what's going on. I'm not waiting and kind of trying to take notes on what the shots are at. I get home though. I know the score is already 6-1 for the Colorado Avalanche. I did not know that the shots were only 18-5. So the Habs, halfway through the game, had 5 shots on goal. Do you really need a recap of that? I don't think so. But once I get back, all of a sudden things start to look up for the Habs. Maybe that's the key, is I need to be sitting here in my home office watching the games in order for them to do anything good. And of course, late in the second period, Denis Gurianov, again, takes a shot, it gets blocked, he collects the own block shot and then snipes it on the second attempt, and all of a sudden, it's 6-2. The Habs are kind of in this thing. Then in the third period, unfortunately, they can't really keep that momentum going. Nathan MacKinnon gets the puck in the neutral zone and he just blows by everybody. Absolutely dog walks Johnny Kovacevic on his way to the net, goes to the forehand and beats Samuel Montembeau and makes it 7-2. What are you going to do? Not too long after that, though, Alex Belzil does his best Nathan MacKinnon impression, skating through everybody on his way to the net. He can't finish, but he does manage to work the puck back to the point where it finds Chris Weidman. He fires it through traffic and makes it 7-3. Moments after that, a missed penalty against Caden Gooley. He probably should have been going off for a cross check there, but they don't call it. Habs go the other way very quickly, get a zone entry. Josh Anderson drops it back from Mike Matheson. He takes a point snipe to make it 7-4. But shortly after that, horseshit call on Josh Anderson. Maybe a bit of a makeup call for the one they missed on Gooley. And Valerie Nichushkin scores on the power play to make it 8-4. That's your final. 8-4, folks. A little bit of a rough one. But again, look at that. I managed to get through the recap of both games in under 7 minutes. That leaves me a lot of time to talk about the silver linings. And I think there absolutely are some silver linings. Number one, let's start from a player standpoint. Denis Gurianov, man. I think that trade is going to be looked back on very favorably for the Montreal Canadiens, particularly if they can work with Gurianov on some of the weaknesses in his game. If he is still a player who has the propensity to improve some of those problem areas, I think he could become a very useful piece for the Montreal Canadiens, and we're seeing it through even some of the roughest games that we could possibly ask to see. I mean, this kid can snipe. He's 25 years old, right? But he can snipe. It's a really good shot. I think anybody who's watched can kind of tell what the issues are in his game. He's very north-south. He doesn't have a whole lot of deception. He's, again, I think I mentioned it in his first game with the Habs, kind of reminiscent of Josh Anderson. Doesn't have a whole lot of deception to his game, but he has a heck of a shot and he skates really fast. If they can work on some of those other aspects, man, I really think that they've got a player here. And I definitely think that it was worth the gamble on Evgeny Dadonov going the other way. Dadonov was never coming back. He's maybe going to do some good things for the Dallas Stars. Congratulations. I wish him nothing but the best. But he was never coming back. They acquired him for a contract in Shea Weber, a guy that's never going to play again. Dadonov looking like he's going to be untradeable for the better part of this season, and they end up turning him into Gurianov, a younger player who kind of has some similarities to Josh Anderson. I think that's a gamble that you make every single fucking day and twice on Sundays. It makes sense. It makes sense, and I'm glad to see him having some success here in Montreal, and hopefully they can parlay that into some future success as well. Now, another silver lining, Caden Gooley. I think Caden Gooley, I mean, obviously he had that penalty against Colorado that didn't get called. But outside of that, like even in that game, he was mixing it up with Nathan MacKinnon, being impactful in pretty much all three zones. And he had a fantastic game the game prior against the Devils. I really liked what he was bringing out there. Again, I think it's super interesting that he's able to miss all that time from injury, come back and look like he hasn't missed a beat. This is a future number one defenseman for the Montreal Canadiens. I wonder, like Mike Matheson, I think would be a great role model for him moving forward. Matheson's clearly very adept at jumping into offensive scenarios. Gooley, his offense has always been kind of a project that's been getting worked on throughout his career in the WHL, and it's slowly coming along in the NHL as well. So I think Matheson's a really good person for him to look up to. And again, another reason why I'd say keep Mike Matheson on the roster, right? I know I talked about potentially trading him before, but it's not something that I would actually do at this stage because I think he's too valuable for this team in terms of having him around, particularly to a player like Caden Gooley that could use a little bit of help figuring out when and when not to jump into the rush. Gooley, I think, is a little more reticent to jump into the rush sometimes. Like, he worries about it because he's very strong defensively, but he doesn't want to necessarily make that jump and get in on rushes or take the puck up ice himself sometimes. So it could be great to have them work together over the next couple of years and really see what Gooley can develop into from an offensive standpoint. Fun times when you look at it that way. And then your final silver lining, something I said the last episode that I actually recorded on time, is that pretty soon the Montreal Canadiens would be probably, I thought, in the bottom five. In other words, in a top five draft position, provided everything lines up properly with the draft lottery. And guess what, folks? Last night, the Arizona Coyotes beat the Minnesota Wild and jumped 1 point in front of the Montreal Canadiens. That puts the Habs currently in fifth last. Which means if the lottery went exactly as it, well, not necessarily as it should, but if it went exactly the way that it'd be projected to go, they'd be number five and they would have a legitimate shot at drafting Zach Benson, who's one of my favorite players in this draft. So that's a huge silver lining, right? A few games back, what are they on? 7-game losing streak now, so it's a little more than a few. But the last time that they won, I remember saying exactly that. I was like, listen, you know, they won a few games, but the schedule is about to get rough. And sure enough, schedule gets rough. They start losing some games. Yes, they got a couple of loser points in there as well, which is not ideal. But despite all of that, they're still in fifth last. And now you have a legitimate chance of maybe sneaking your way up there in the top five. Is that realistic? I mean, some of the teams that they're chasing, or reverse chasing, I guess, if you want to call it that, are pretty bad, right? Anaheim is the next one up. They are 4 points back from the Habs as of right now, but they're on a 1-game losing streak of their own. Habs keep losing. They could get that far back. I think that's possible. It is possible that Anaheim can gain 4 points on Montreal. Chicago, I think, is the next one. I think that's where it kind of stops. I don't think they're going to get behind Chicago, San Jose, or Columbus at the top of the order there. I think that's virtually impossible. Chicago's 8 points back, so is San Jose. And then Columbus is Columbus has 47 points. So they're a full 7 points back. What am I talking about, 7 points? They're a full 11 points back from the Montreal Canadiens. So that one's going to be impossible. San Jose and Chicago, very tall order. Anaheim, not so impossible. So the Habs are in a position right now where, again, legitimate shot at Zach Benson if everything ended right now and nobody moved up in the lottery. And also, their lottery odds in and of themselves are at 8.5% of the first overall pick. So that's not terrible. You know? You tell any team out there, we'll give you an 8.5% chance at Connor Bedard, I think they'd take it, unless they were one of those bottom three teams already. He's a great player. And an 8.5% chance of getting a generational player is better than zero. So, take it how you will. But I think, personally, I call that good news, and I call that a silver lining for the Montreal Canadiens. And since we're already talking about tanking, I might as well stay on that subject for a little bit and take a look once more at their upcoming schedule, which is not getting any easier. They've got a back-to-back right now, so they're playing tomorrow night against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Then on Thursday, they've got the Florida Panthers. That's one that you want to win, folks. We want that one to be a dub. Then they got the Lightning. They got a home-and-home with the Lightning on the 18th and the 21st. And then the Bruins and the Blue Jackets, which is your first truly winnable game coming up. And then the Sabres, Flyers, Panthers again, Hurricanes, Red Wings, Capitals, Leafs, Islanders, Bruins. That's how the season ends. If I look at this schedule right now, the Capitals are maybe beatable. Maybe. But I think they're going to be in a stretch run there where they're going to be looking at maybe trying to take over a wild card spot. I don't think they're going to give you anything easy. Outside of that, what are the winnable games? The Flyers and the Blue Jackets. That's really it. That's it. The other ones aren't really winnable. Maybe that final game against the Bruins. The Bruins are going to have everything wrapped up, so I could see them coming out with, you know, their worst possible roster and sitting all of their stars, but who knows? right? By the end of this season, I think they're going to be in the bottom five. And we'll see whether or not they can get into like fourth or third last. I think it's probably going to be fourth at best, but hey, the difficulty of the schedule coming up is what I'm trying to get at here. It's pretty tough for the Habs. Pretty tough. So, absolutely possible that they could move up a little bit in that bottom five. And we'll find out. We'll have to wait and see. It's going to be a little bit tough to find anything positive to talk about in those games other than the tank and their current standings in the draft lottery. But I will try. I'm going to be looking at those games. I'm going to be trying to see some good performances from young players. What do they bring to the table? And how are we taking a look at maybe how these players fit within the next couple years' worth of rosters? That's kind of what the team should be doing as well. I really hope that's what they're doing. I hope they're looking at Raphael Harvey-Pinard and, you know, how does he fit? Where would we use him next year? I hope they're taking a look at Caden Gooley and trying to think about who do we want him to play with next year. I hope they're taking a look at, you know, Joel Edmondson and David Savard and trying to figure out where can we send these guys in a trade. I think this team's got a lot of young defensemen already that have shown NHL ability. They've got more that are going to be coming up in the next couple of years. I do not think that we have the roster space to keep on entertaining guys like Joel Edmondson and David Savard in the lineup. I think you got to make space. Got to make space. You got to draft well. And that's how you get this rebuild on the right track here. I'd say it's on the right track, but it could be on a speedier track if they do it right. Anyways, that's kind of all I have to say, and I'm exhausted, so I want to go to bed after all that driving and everything. So I managed to keep this episode just over 16 minutes, so c'est une grosse soirée pour les employés de soutien. We're on Spotify, Google Play, we're on Apple. I'm on Twitter at DrakeMT, drop me a follow, I'd appreciate it very much. I'm also on Substack, mattdrake.substack.com. If you drop me a follow there, it's free, and it always will be. Thank you, as always, for listening, and of course, à la prochaine.